All right. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG Renegade Radio. Mark is the game changers in the house, holding you down. One third of the illustrious three-man booth. Let me introduce the other two parts. I got my man D. Wills holding us down. Holler at the people.
Hey, it's all good. We got Scandal. We got NBA basketball back. We got all kinds of craziness going on. It just feels good to be a real sports guy this week.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot going on. And we got a new moniker, you know, formerly known as Steel T Sports PhD. Nowadays, he goes by simply 5K. 5K. Bring it live for the people real quick, man.
He's correcting papers.
What's that?
I see. Is he correcting papers?
He must be, man. I think we lost him for a second there.
Nah, what's happening?
Oh, there you go. 5K in the house.
You know,
lay it down, brother. Lay it down.
I'm good. Typically, I'm that cat sitting in the back row trying to not be seen by the professor. But today, I got all my homework done. I am ready. Got a good show. I'm all ready. I got my notes. Got my notepads, got my highlighter. I'm ready to roll tonight.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get into this. The first thing we're going to talk about on tonight's show is we're going to get into, you know, over the past week it's been announced that it seems like the players and the owners in the NBA have come to an agreement on the new terms of the collective bargaining agreement. And it looks like we're going to have an NBA season kicking off on Christmas Day. For basketball junkies like myself, couldn't ask for a better gift, you know. So we're going to get into that a little bit. We're going to talk about some of the intriguing storylines for the upcoming season that really have us kind of interested to see what's going on. You know, so we're going to kick off the show, as we always do about this time, with the funky editorial. In that, we're going to get into some of the storylines in the NBA that we're going to be looking forward to over the next month as we begin to anticipate the start of the season.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, say it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Now, I will throw out a disclaimer real quick. Listeners out there, bear with the game changer. All right, he's got a little bit of a cold. You know, his vocal cords are a little strained from coaching. Starting to sound like Doc Rivers. Phil Jackson, Scotty. You know, so just bear with me for a moment as my voice recovers from all of the things that we got going on. Again, we're real sports guys. You know, we're your internet radio corner boys, and we got real lives outside of what we do on Tuesday nights from 8:30 to 10:30. But, hey, I'm strapping them up. I'm coming to play. No excuses. You know, no prisoners. Make no excuses to take no prisoners. That's how we rolling tonight. So let's go ahead and get into this. 5K. 5K, my brother, 5K. What? I was thrilled when I heard the news, first and foremost. You know, I was ecstatic when I heard the news that the league was coming back and that they had finally come to an agreement. And then, you know, I let it sit with me for a couple of minutes, and then I started to get even more excited and more giddy about all of the potential storylines that were going to take place. What's the storyline that you're looking forward to seeing develop over the 66-game season that they plan on having?
I'm looking forward to see what the Miami Heat do. And before I get into that, let me back up. I was thrilled that the NBA got this thing figured out before really America started noticing. And we would have started noticing Christmas time when there was no basketball. We certainly would have noticed after the Super Bowl and after all the bowls were done. But for me, I'm really interested what happens with the NBA in terms of the Miami Heat. I think Pat Riley's going to have another year to try to put things together, to put better supporting cast around the big three. I think the big three is going to have another year in terms of playing together, being cohesive. And at this point, I think they should be the favorites. But that's the biggest storyline I'm looking forward to.
You know, that's a real interesting storyline, because there are a couple elements of the CBA as I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at some of the changes that they've made. There are a couple elements of the CBA that, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how teams like the Heat, the Lakers, the Mavericks, how they handle these new elements, like the amnesty clause, where teams can eliminate a contract. They can just wave a dude goodbye. You know, so guys like Elton Brand, Gilbert Arenas, you might not want to unpack real quick when you get back to town and you go to the team facilities. You might not want to put too much stuff in your locker because you may not be there too long. So teams can get rid of some of those bad contracts and not have them count against their salary cap. The players will still get paid, but those contracts won't count against the team's salary cap. Now, but the interesting part of it is that those players just won't hit the open market. As they did in the past when they've had the amnesty provision. They had it back in 2005 with the CBA that we're just ending. With this new one, now what's going to happen is teams that are under the salary cap get to bid first. So those high-spending teams have to wait and kind of get the scraps, pick up the scraps from what's left over after the teams with cap space can bid on players who've been released. But it's going to be real interesting because I think that's going to shake up a lot of things. And that's going to be where some of these veteran teams, some of these teams with solid rosters can pick up a key piece. You know, I can see the Heat picking up a guy like Samuel Dalembert. You know, a guy like Baron Davis will probably be available. You know, there are going to be a lot of guys who are going to be out there who are going to be available through this amnesty clause. Brandon Roy may become available, you know, a guy of that caliber. If you put him on the Heat, he really changes the complexion of that team, and that gives him another superstar caliber player who, again, doesn't have to carry the load like he does in Portland, but, you know, he can come off the bench and pick up some minutes. So it's going to be real interesting to see how all of this shakes out and how some of these GMs and team presidents begin to figure out how to use this new system to their benefit. I'm going to pass it to my man, D. Wills. Give me something that you're looking forward to with this new season.
I'm looking at it's a contrasting kind of look at it, the old and the new. I'm looking at, I want to see, you know, what our Celtics going to do in terms of, you know, what are they going to do? The old coach, can they make another run? Did they learn something from watching, you know, what the Mavericks did to the Heat? Is there something they can learn from that? Is there a formula in terms of them trying to get through this Eastern Conference? And then some of the young teams, or young-led teams, Oklahoma City, Chicago, will they take the next step? You know, there's kind of like there's a ceiling you got to break through to greatness, right? Y'all know that. Y'all sports guys. And there's, even though it's thin, it's still 1,000 miles away in terms of from the neck up. And so when you think about Durant and those young Oklahoma City players, and you think about Chicago, getting to that next level takes a whole other level of thinking and commitment, and whether or not, you know, they're going to be able to do it, and how they might use this short track, because 65 games, that, you know, it's almost like running a short track race. Sometimes you might get to jump out and put your foot on somebody's neck quick. And can some of these young guys come in and take advantage of that? And how are some of these wily veterans with a shorter season, like Boston and some of these other teams, be able to utilize that as a way for taking advantage of it? Because, you know, when you're old, you know, the difference between 65 and 82 games is huge. Even though they might push more games on some, the difference between playing those games could be an advantage for a veteran squad. And so that's the kind of thing I want to see. You know, some of these teams that were elite kind of heading down because of age, and some of these young teams, are they going to be able to break through here in this short season?
Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, the older teams definitely, in my opinion, have an advantage because they're going to be coming in with more continuity, that experience, and then just having to be able to sprint and be able to just go hard for 66 games. I think that's, you know, you may see guys like, you know, from what I hear, from what I've been reading, Kobe is you know, jumping out of the gym, putting the ball between his legs again. You know, yeah, he went over to Germany, you know, messed with the Germans, got his knee right, you know, had that got that illegal procedure done. And he's supposed to be, Kobe's supposed to be back, you know. So the Lakers, look, with Kobe being Kobe, the Lakers look like a very different team. You know, you put the Spurs on a short schedule, and I think you don't see what you saw last year where they collapsed in the playoffs against an 8 seed as a 1 seed, but I think you see more of what you saw in the regular season where the Spurs were the top team in the league for most of the season. Then you also got the Celtics, who, again, are still within striking range of getting back to the finals. And, again, a shortened season helps them keep their health and helps them, you know, they don't have to take a lot of time to figure out how to gel together. That's just enough time for them to incorporate a guy like Jeff Green fully, and then also to incorporate new pieces. So, you know, those young teams I think are at a disadvantage with the shortened schedule because young players need more reps. You know, the younger players need more reps, and they need that time to grow and go through some of those battles during the regular season and go through some of those ups and downs. I mean, if you think of where the Heat were after 66 games last year, you know, those extra 16 games and those struggles that they went through throughout the season, I think really helped them in the playoffs because it gave them kind of a us-against-the-world feel where I don't know if they get that through just 66 games, you know. So for those teams that do make moves during the free agent period, I think it's going to, you know, shorten season, may hurt them a little bit. One thing that I'm really interested in seeing, well, two things, where CP3 winds up and where Dwight Howard wind up. Because I think they're both going to get traded this year. I don't think Orlando's saving grace might be that they may be able to get rid of Gilbert Arenas' contract, which may put them in a position to trade for CP3, because that's like $20 million coming off the books with Gilbert Arenas, with Gilbert Arenas' deal coming off. And that could easily facilitate a trade with the Hornets if they can bring back some assets. Who knows if they can pull that off, but that could be a huge help. And the same thing, you know, for Dwight Howard, he could wind up leaving Orlando, you know, and CP3 could wind up in New York. Who knows where Howard will wind up, but I think those are kind of the stories that I'm really looking forward to. I think it's going to be a really exciting couple of weeks once free agency kicks off. Talk about some of the free agents that you guys think could be difference makers for some of the contenders out there. Are there any guys out there you guys have kind of noticed that, you know, this guy is a free agent this year, he gets with the right team, he could really, really have a huge impact?
A couple guys for me. just a side note, you know, half the Denver Nugget team
is in China. And they can't come back. They behind the red curtain.
That's right. You know, Wilson Chandler, a Benton Harbor, Michigan native, is averaging 43 points a game in the National Basketball League. He's a free agent, and I think he'd be a good fit with a couple of different teams. I mean, really, any of the contenders. I mean, he's got a very unique skill set, which I would actually put in the likes of a Lamar Odom, a guy who's 6'8", 6'9", that plays bigger than what he actually is. He's a heck of a shooter. He can put it on the deck. His game has just developed and improved every year, and I think we're going to see him have a breakout all-star type of year in the right situation. The second guy is Tyson Chandler. Without him, Dallas takes a big step back, even with getting Caron Butler back. I think without Chandler, They're the Dallas of old, weak in the middle, strong everywhere else. But if you put Chandler with, hypothetically, the Heat, again, any of the contending teams, he makes them instantly stronger. And if you think about it, he's the guy in that mold. He's the guy that the Heat needed last year. So those are my two guys.
Okay, D. Wills, who are some guys that you have earmarked as potential game changers, so to speak, on new teams?
I would say I like the Tyson Chandler because I think he helps to set your defense, and I think that he demonstrated with the Mavericks that you know, he can be a game changer. He can set your defense. He can get you out the run. And so I think Chandler would be a good one. Another person I'm going to go a little bit under the radar on this one would be Tayshaun Prince. And part of it is Tayshaun allows you to be flexible. If you get in with the right fit, with the right team, you know, I think that he could provide some stability. He could be somebody who could give your second unit some stability. He's someone, he can guard out in space. He can help with defense. I mean, he's such a kind of intangible piece that I think that he's the kind of person that's under the radar. You know, if you're able to get him, he can make quite a difference for you. I like the Wilson Chandler. Now, Wilson is a restricted free agent.
Yeah, he's restricted.
Okay. Yeah, so that might be.
And he's not available until March because the China guys can't come back until March. They suck. They behind the. When I said they behind the red curtain, they behind that red curtain.
Tell them they need to go get some of that Peking chicken. It's the bomb. In that same room that Clinton sat in, I'm telling you, you'll love it. Enjoy your time while you're over there. Do what you do. You know, you should have known better. They ain't letting you back. Oh no.
Nah.
Give me some good eating over there, and don't get lost because it's gonna be hard to get back to your hotel. I would say another cat, I want to add another one, so this is, I'm going under the radar here, is he's kind of had this up and down career, but you know he can fill it up, and he get in with the right squad is Jamal Crawford. And the reason why I'm saying that is that sometimes when you look at free agency, people looking for big splashes. Sometimes what great general managers do, they get that right fit. And a guy like Jamal with the right situation, Jamal can defend when he wants to. He can score. He can, you know, you think about Jamal in something like, you know, out in L.A., you know, giving some firepower with Kobe. That, get out in the space, can guard on the wing. You know, that might be another one. So I'm often not getting caught up in some of the big time. I think some of these folks like Tayshaun's, the Crawford, some of these unrestricted folks like that who I think with the right team, right GM, can put you over the top.
Yeah, I definitely dig you. You read my mind with Tayshaun. You know, he's from Compton. I'd be really excited to see Tayshaun go back home and go to L.A. and play out there. I think that'd be a hell of a get for the Lakers. I think he'd be a good fit as a guy who can handle the ball. He can play D. He can shoot from the perimeter, and he can give them some athleticism on the perimeter, on the wings, that they've been lacking now that Ron is kind of slowing down a little bit. Because I think Tayshaun's got a couple good years left in him. He basically sat out all year. Last year was pretty much a redshirt year for him and Rip Hamilton, another guy who Rip will probably get amnesty, so he'll probably wind up out there somewhere available to a team. And that's another crafty vet who, in the right situation, you know, if he winds up on the Celtics, or a team like that, he can help out a lot. And a couple of guys I really like for the Heat, I think, you know, you mentioned Crawford as somebody who goes to the Lakers. I actually like Crawford going to the Heat. I think what the Heat need is a guy who can play the point but doesn't have to play the point. Mm-hmm. And I think that allows, he can play good enough D. He's got good size. He can kind of be that Ron Harper to LeBron's Jordan. You know what I mean? How Harper played off the ball. You had, you know, Jordan and Pippen, who really did a lot of the ball handling, but Harp could still handle the rock. And Harp played the D, Harp could slash, Harp could shoot, and Harp could fill it up every now and then. You know, and I think that's the kind of a role that Jamal Crawford could play for a team like the Heat. He can give them some scoring from the point spot, but still guard the position fairly well. And then another guy I like for the Heat is D'Alembert. I think D'Alembert is destined to wind up in Miami. He's Haitian. There's a huge Haitian community there. I think he wants to go home to be a part of that and to be close. He's done a lot of charity work and philanthropy in Haiti. I think, to me, that's almost a match made in heaven if the money's right. And I think he'd be willing to take a little bit less at this point in his career because he's coming off a huge deal that he didn't deserve. Mm-hmm. to go down and play that role for the Heat that Tyson Chandler played for the Mavericks, where he anchored their back line. He allowed them to gamble on the perimeter and really pressure teams. I think, you know, D'Alembert is a good fit there. Two guys that I think that are out there that are also interesting pieces, Andre Kirilenko. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, dude was a do-it-everything forward. You know, he blocked shots, he got steals, he could pass, he could rebound, he could score. You know, he did a little bit of everything, and things just kind of tailed off toward the end out there in Utah. I think for him going to a team like the Knicks, they have an up and down style. He could fit in kind of between Carmelo and Amari. I think he'd be a good fit out there. Another guy I really like is Carl Landry. I think he could go to a team, whether it's a San Antonio or even a Dallas, and really give them some solid minutes off the bench as a strong six man who shoots a high percentage, really active on the glass, and could give teams matchup fits. When he comes in, you know, teams with bigger fours, he comes in and he can use his quickness against them. So, you know, those are some guys I like. Now, there are some teams who are in position to really make some noise because, again, you look at a team like the Nuggets, like you pointed out, 5K, half their rosters over in China. So they got a lot of money to spend. You know, their top player, Nene, is a free agent, so they got a lot of money to spend. The Rockets got a lot of money to spend with Yao coming off the books with his retirement. You know, the Pacers got a lot of money to spend. So there are some teams with a lot of money to spend. Who are some teams out there that you can see making some pretty big moves that put themselves in a position to contend, that were contenders last year, or some teams that were contenders last year and are in position to make just a few tweaks to their roster to kind of take their team to that next level where they were kind of right under that top tier, they could jump up a little bit. Either one of you can take that one.
So I need you guys not to laugh at me, okay? Self-esteem is a little weak in this area, so I need for you guys to put the phone on mute if you laugh me out, okay?
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Clippers, the L.A. Clippers.
I just muted my phone.
I couldn't get to it.
I told these two guys were not only my co-hosts, they were best men at my wedding, that I needed, that I had some self-esteem issues here, and they just laughed me out. But I'm going to move.
Hey, I'll put it on mute.
And I want to say this, so I'm going to get back, is from a pure basketball, you're right. That's the only thing. I mean, what you're saying in terms of when you look at the current structure of the team, you look at it, if you just took the name off of it, you just looked at that team, you're right.
Yeah.
And so what we're saying is, will they mess it up? That's the only thing.
Because, I mean, if you look at it, they have one of the young, dynamic guy in the league that is just, he is transcending upwards in Blake Griffin. And I think if you put the right people around him, that he can just be dynamite in the J.J. Evans sense of the word. You know, I mean, you put a strong point guard with him. Laugh me out again, but you get one star to go out there, and that might even be Chris Paul, somebody who guys.
I love to see that. You know, I paired those two on NBA 2K11, and it was pretty hot.
There you go. There you go. Research. Okay?
Hey. No, and you know, I'm laughing. I'm laughing because, it's the Clippers. But I totally agree with you. I really do. I think they're another star away from really taking a jump. And if they can get a guy like CP3 and keep Eric Gordon, ooh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a place, and, you know, we talk about a guy like Tayshaun Prince being from Compton. He could go to he could play for the Clippers, you know, and still be back home and solidify that small forward spot for them. You got a lineup of, and again, they have to figure out a way to finagle this, you know, whether they give up Bledsoe and Aminu or, you know, Chris Kamen's got an expiring deal that's coming off the books next year. You know, whether they move guys like that and some assets and draft picks someplace in order to get a guy like Chris Paul and still keep Eric Gordon, which I think will be really difficult for them to do, because if they get Paul in, they're going to have to give up Gordon. But even if they have to do that, if they can keep some of those pieces that they have and pick up a guy, a veteran small forward like a Tayshaun Prince, or even bring in a sneaky good pickup like a Michael Redd, you know, a space-the-floor type of guy, that team could turn around real quick. Because DeAndre Jordan is a solid player. He's a solid guy at the five. You don't need him to be spectacular. He rebounded block shots. That's all you need from him. You need him to complement Blake. And then you get a point guard who can score in CP3 and dish the ball, and you got a decent roster. You know, so I'm not really mad at that, man. That's a sneaky good pick right there. That's a sneaky good pick.
And I like the kid they picked up in the draft, Trey Tompkins from Georgia. I really like this game. He's a big physical kid, probably come in and give them some minutes with the four and the five. If for some reason that Kamen has his annual foot issues, he's a kid who might be able to step in and play right away. They also picked up another kid from Georgia. I can't think of his name. He's a shooting guard. Leslie, I believe was his name.
Yeah, Travis Leslie, the kid from Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, they picked him up pretty late, but I don't think they had a first-round pick, which is
they did not. They did not. Yeah. The Clippers was without a lottery pick.
Yeah, I mean, the Cleveland pick, the Kyrie Irving pick, I believe that came from the Clippers. And the,
yes, it did.
Aaron Davis trade.
Yes,
so.
It did. Yeah, that trade will go down as an L.
That's right.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I like those picks. D. Wills, who you got?
I'm going to take a team that was just made the playoffs and has some good pieces in place. I don't know where they're going, but I love the coach's attitude last year, be the Pacers. And part of it is I think they got some good solid bones, and they look like they got a little bit of cap space. And this is where Indiana in the past would have made some solid moves. So I'm wondering what they're going to do to do that. But, you know, you got McRoberts, you got Hibbert, in the front court. You got what, Collison in the back court.
Hansborough.
I mean, you got
Danny Granger still there.
Granger. You got a lot of pieces there, and it's some guys that just need to grow up, but you know, take that next step. But I think Hansborough took a step last year. I mean, he really asserted himself. He became Cycle T, and he gave us his NBA version of that. I think they got some. They got the kind of squad that you can build long term on with the right kind of players, and the coach seems like he's kind of harnessed that energy. And so I think, you know, if they are able to wisely use this cap space to create some opportunities, some of the things I'm reading, maybe this is an opportunity to get someone like a Crawford, you know, in that space where he can go off a little bit. That's a team that I'm thinking that, you know, they made some good moves last year. You know, you got, you know, this is how you want to grow a team. They made it to the eighth seed of the playoffs, you know, in the playoffs. Now it's about, can you build from there? That's a team that I'm thinking that, you know, they have a chance to to do something. There's still, you know, Cavaliers are down. Detroit's in transition still. Chicago's there, but they can compete against Chicago. They battle Chicago. You know, the East has some teams who are in turmoil. You got some solid ones, but I think they can move up from 8 to, you know, 7. And by taking Crawford, let's say, you definitely put a dent in Atlanta. So in a way, you know, by adding someone like that, you hurt one of the folks that you're competing for in the playoff ranks.
What team do you guys think that missed the playoffs last year, was in the lottery? Which one of those teams do you guys think actually has a shot at making the playoffs? And those teams were Cleveland, Minnesota, Utah, Toronto, Washington, Sacramento, Detroit, Charlotte, Golden State, Milwaukee, Utah, Phoenix, and the Rockets.
Let me jump in here. I think a couple teams, I think. One team that I think could sneak in, and it really does depend on how things pan out. I really like Derek Williams. And if Ricky Rubio is anything of what he's supposed to be, Minnesota's got a decent nucleus with those two and Kevin Love. If nothing else, to make a move and bring in another legitimate frontline guy, they got some pieces to deal and move around to get a better team that maybe could sneak in as an 8 seed in the West. Another team I like, and I think this will hinge upon potential moves, but it's the New Jersey Nets in the East. I think that the bottom half of the East is still kind of open, and there's still a lot of room for movement for teams. I can see Atlanta taking a couple steps back. You know, I can see, you know, like D. Wills pointed out, the Pacers moving up. I can see the Sixers sliding back. And I think a team like New Jersey could begin to move up with a full season of Deron Williams there. Depending, they're going to have some cap space, depending upon what they do with that. And I think they're going to be a player in the potential Dwight Howard trade talks. I think they could, you know, maybe they could talk Orlando into taking Brooke Lopez and some picks or something with some additional players involved. But I think they'll have a chance to be in that conversation to get Dwight Howard out to New Jersey. And if they do that, then again, I think if Dwight Howard gets paired with either Deron Williams or CP3, I think it's going to be trouble for the rest of the league. Because the last thing he needs is somebody who actually wants to get him the ball, because he's played with guys who refuse to get him the ball for a long time. So, you know, I think those are some teams that I think could really turn the corner, who weren't in the playoffs last year, who could wind up in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I like Minnesota, but a lot of it's going to depend on what happens with Portland and their ability to bounce back. So that might dictate a little bit. Given that half of Denver is hanging out in Shanghai, they got a shot this year. And that's what's about a short run like this. When you got solid people like they have, who can get on the glass, who can get extra possessions, on a short track like this, that's money. That might be 2, 3, 4 games just on your big fellas taking care of that glass. I would say, you know, Milwaukee might be an interesting group.
I didn't want to say the Bucks. I didn't want to seem like a homer.
Yeah, I think Milwaukee has a good nucleus, and I think they had a down year. I think it was almost like that sophomore whatever slump. I just think they got the energy up. I think they're going to get back at it. I think they could have a good run this year. I think they could get back into the mix a little bit more. I'm leaning back on New Jersey. New Jersey's got a lot of good pieces, but it all depends on what Collins is going to do with Philly. I mean, that's going to be tough every night. You think about New York, just in their division. I mean, New York is going to be good every night. Philly's going to scrap. Boston, you know, they got some time off and been able to chill. They're gonna be fresh. I think New Jersey might be a year away from it. But if you sit me and push me on, I'm thinking Minnesota. I will go back to Minnesota because I think just because of Denver's situation, I think that pushed Minnesota up. And I would say Milwaukee.
I like that pick. I'm thinking of the Warriors. I like what the Warriors are doing out
and
there.
Play.
Like the Warriors, man.
Can
I mean,
you
call me
it?
A sucker, but.
Can you do it?
You dig it?
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I like the Warriors, too. I think the Warriors have some nice pieces. I think they got some nice players out there. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm biased, but I think Mark Jackson's going to do a fine job out there. You know, give him a couple of years. Well, in the NBA, you don't get a couple of years. But give him a year or so. I think he can transform that team. They got the pieces out there. And to me, the key piece is Curry, Steph Curry. If you see what he did in his last 30 to 40 games of his rookie year when he was healthy, I mean, he put up some dominant numbers. I mean, this kid was averaging 20, 23 points a game, 7 rate assists, and defensively he was getting more solid. You know, I just think if they can figure out a way to make it work, and it may even make sense to get rid of Ellis, because Ellis is young enough, he's explosive enough, where some of these other teams may be willing to give, you know, take him in exchange with another piece that would be more congruent with Curry. You know, I think they got a decent big guy in Biedrens. Is Biedrens coming back, or you guys know?
He might get amnesty, man. He might be the guy that they get rid of. He's making $10 million a year, and he's not playing for $10 million a year right now. You know, he's not giving them $10 million worth. So.
Yeah, I had him in fantasy, boy. He didn't do nothing, but he should have been sleeping with the fishies.
If they was counting fouls, he'd have been all right for you.
Well, you know, I like Klay Thompson. You know, of course I do. I like the last name Thompson. I'm a fan of it.
Brother got jokes.
Yeah, I'm full of them tonight. I mean, this kid was drafted 11th, but, you know, if he wasn't busted for smoking weed during the senior year, I think this was a top 7, top 6 pick. And, I mean, this kid can stroke it. He can stroke it. And he plays strong defensively. You know, you think about the kid from New York, can't think of his name,
Landry Fields.
Yeah, Landry Fields, the way he stepped in and was just solid all year as a rookie. You know, I could see Kid Thompson come in and do that. I believe this is Michael Thompson's kid.
Yep.
The guy that used to play for the Lakers. And, you know, he's probably more of a polished player than Fields is coming in. So, I mean, I like what they're doing out there. They need some more beef. And I think they need to change the style up a little bit. Hopefully Mark Jackson will bring a little bit of a slower tempo and more emphasis on the defensive end.
I guess my question to y'all would be, you know, San Antonio launched their dynasty on a short season, if I'm correct.
Yep. Yes.
And so people use, I mean, who do you see? Do you see a potential San Antonio this year? A group, someone that could take advantage of this situation to kind of get their franchise on track?
Miami, if you're talking about launching a dynasty. I think this would be the time for them to seize that moment with a shortened season. They can really focus in. You know, they really can get focused on winning the championship and focused on getting after, really just focused on playing basketball. And the circus won't be as I think the circus of everything that went on last year weighed on them a little bit. At different points in the season, it was heavier than other points. But you could just see when they lost that game, the way everybody reacted, it was like there was a lot on those guys. And I think a shortened season, where it's more of just a sprint, and there's less time for them to get into their own heads, I think will be beneficial to them. Another team that I think could benefit from.
Before you get into it, did you see that Bron is waves at their?
Yeah, I just saw it. They had the Ohio State game.
Oh,
as I'm talking about these cats, yeah, they had the Ohio State game.
NBA players clowning. They in Beijing.
They all over, man.
They all over. I give love, man. Nobody celebrates a lockout more than NBA players. I just. I love them. They got their swag on at all times.
I'm surprised LeBron is cool with being back in Ohio.
They didn't move him. That security detail. That Secret Service with him.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And you know, Little River's gonna try to show out. Because they in the crowd. Oh.
Daddy in the crowd, too, so he's trying to do it. But
right, right.
You're going to get nothing but the gas face tonight.
But I think a team like Oklahoma City could also benefit from a short season. You know, I think they need to just kind of – I think they need to get back to the playoffs as quickly as possible so they can get the bad taste out of their mouth, the way things ended for them at the end of the playoffs I think the media did a good job of creating a situation between Westbrook and Durant. But I think the quicker they get back to the playoffs, the quicker they can exercise those demons. So a team like Oklahoma City, I think, also would be best served by this shortened season on top of all of the older teams. You know, I think the older the team, I think what will happen is we'll see either the start of a long run by a team, whether it's Miami or OKC, will begin to start a long run, or we'll see one of these older teams sneak in and steal a ring real quick, whether it's the Spurs stealing another one, or the Lakers, or the Mavericks, or the Celtics come in and steal another ring. You know, I think we could see that happen as well.
I mean, you said Dallas. Do you see Dallas? I mean, I think Dallas, I mean, before I said, well, it's going to be tough to repeat for Dallas, but with this short season, it actually increases the probability of Dallas. You know, if they're able to hold Tyson and do some of the things and maybe add something. I mean, Cuban hasn't been shy about spending money and
yeah, but I think that's going to change with this new structure, man. I think the way they're penalizing teams for spending money and the way things are set up, I think it's going.
Well,
you know, they got a lot of guys making you know seven figures.
Yeah, but the sense was that it didn't. What I was saying is, from what they were saying, it seemed like the. With this deal, the big market teams seem to still got the – they don't have a hard cap. They don't have too many penalties on it, some stuff on mid-level exceptions. But there doesn't seem to be as much of a deterrent on spending that money.
Yeah.
And, I'm thinking if I'm Mark Cuban, if I'm going to spend the money, this is the year to spend the money. If I can get back-to-back, what that does with the value of my franchise and marketing, I'm going to make that money back because I'm
yeah.
– I mean, I'm in Dallas where they spend money.
Yeah.
You know, where everybody is suntan and chilling. I'm bringing it back again. So I'm thinking, Cuban loved the limelight. You know, he'll spend that because there's something about him that said the money's worth it. He's like the new Steinbrenner. he's like, I'm going to spend to win if I have to because he just loved winning. So I was saying in the short, because this is a short track, right?
Yeah. Definitely a short track.
You got Dirk and you got the cats. You got the cats who are not afraid for the big moment. You know, you're getting some folks, you know, you're getting healthier. You know, you got a chance to make some moves. You got some unrestricted. I think, what's my guy's name that was hurt?
Butler.
Butler. Now, he's unrestricted, right?
Yeah, he's unrestricted. They got Butler. Was unrestricted. Chandler's unrestricted. And then they also have Berea, who's out there. I think he's – I don't know if he's restricted or not, but Murray is available.
You got somebody like Battier's out there. I mean, you let Berea go, you get Battier, you pick up some other pieces. I mean, you've got some pieces sitting out there that you can add to the mix. I'm just thinking, do you think they could be in the mix on this? So if they went two in a row – you just got to give him a chance to breathe on two. Like,
yeah.
This is like a regroup season. So if he can win with this, I mean, Dallas could be an interesting team.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're also getting Roddy Bobois back, who was out pretty much all last season, which is like getting a draft pick, you know, getting a first-round player back on your team who can spell Jason Kidd and you know, slide over and do a little Jason Terrying out there on the court.
So, Marcus, I got to ask you, you know, getting you back for breaking my self-esteem here, we need for you to give us your annual reason why this is going to be the year for Greg Oden to break it.
All right. I'm absolutely ready to do this, too. All right. Again, all Greg Oden got to do is stay healthy, man. It's as simple as that. The brother stay healthy. When he's healthy, he's an impact player. He makes a difference for that team. You know, if you look at the metrics, you look at his stats, before he got hurt, he was starting to put it together. Unfortunately, he got hurt. And unfortunately, his bones may be made of chalk. You know, that's the unfortunate part of it. But when he's healthy and he's ready to go, you know, he's right there, man. There's no disputing that. So, you know, we'll just have to see. I'm all in on Greg Oden, man. Greg Oden can play when he's hurt, when he's not healthy. I mean, when he's healthy, you know, when he's not hurt.
Who was the superhero that Sam Jackson played? In Unbreakable, where
Mr. Glass.
That's old, man. That's old.
It is. It really is. It really is, man. He probably just broke his ankle as we was talking about him right now. Right now, he probably just broke something. I ain't mad at you. You had to get me back for the whole Clippers thing because you've been on the Clippers bandwagon for a year or two now. All right. So as we continue to lead up to the first NBA games and the start of the NBA season, we're going to do a little exercise here on The Real Sports Guys. All right. We each took, you know, I think it was back in the mid-90s, 97, 96, somewhere around there. The NBA celebrated its 50-year anniversary, and it came out with its top 50 players of all time list. That was about, you know, almost 15, 20 years ago. So what we're going to do here on RSG is we're going to take you through. Each of us has come up with our own list of a new top 50 players, you know, including new guys, updating that list. So we're going to go 10 by 10 for the next couple of weeks up until the start of the NBA season. And we're going to unveil 10 players from each of our lists. So 5K is going to unveil his bottom 10. So right now we're going to start at 50. We're going to go 50 to 40. Next week we'll go 39 to 30. And then the week after that we'll go 29 to 20 and so forth and so on until we get to our top 10. All right? So I'm going to go ahead and pass the mic to 5K. And let him break this down. And we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about his list. And if he got some bogus people on there, we're going to let him know about that. Let's go.
That's right. I would expect nothing less, okay? All right, so it's time for disclaimers. I'm gonna keep my disclaimers of 60 seconds. Hit me with the buzzer if I go over, game changer. All right, so, I mean, the top 50 list, this was a challenge for me, and I'm sure it was for you guys, too. Even though this list was for just you guys and for our listeners, I felt a responsibility to put my best foot forward. So with my list, I looked at skills. I looked at skills that were transferable and transcended generations. So there's no George Mikan on my list. Yes, he was a dominant force when he played, you know, in the 40s and 50s or whenever he played, but I'm not sure if George Mikan would make a roster in 2011, so he's not on my list. So I'm looking at guys that could play today, and for that reason, my list is probably tilted with more modern players from the 80s and on, the 70s and on. And part of that is because these are the guys that I've seen more tape on or watched, you know, as a kid through being an adult. All right. Those are my disclaimers. So at 50, I've got Wes Unseld. Okay. At 49, I've got Dave Cowens. At 48, this may surprise you guys, I moved Paul Pierson to the list. And let me back up. So Wes Unseld, his numbers aren't great. 14-11 averages in his career, but his intangibles were just outstanding. You know, they say he could throw a full length chest pass, outlet pass. you know, but his intangibles were there. Cowan, 17-14 throughout his career. He was an MVP one year, won a couple of championships with the Celtics. Paul Pierce is a guy that was interesting for me because, believe it or not, I've only got four or five guys in this list that are still playing today. And Paul Pierce was a really interesting guy for me because you look at his numbers and they're very solid. I mean, they're better than a lot of guys that are on my list. But the last couple of years, he just stepped up as a gamer. And what he did the two or three years that they played in the finals, or the 2 years against the Lakers, to me, put him on this list because he was clearly the best player on the Celtics. And at times, he was the best player on the fit on the court. And that's saying a lot when you're on the same court as Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Kobe Bryant, all these guys. Alex English, 47. Guy from Battle Creek, Michigan, not far from where I grew up in Kalamazoo. Believe it or not, this guy is 13th overall in scoring. When he retired, he was 8th. And this is just a smooth, smooth cat. When I think of him, I think of George Gervin. You know, he played with the Nuggets most of his career in the Nuggets. He played in this up-and-down system of Doug Moe. And this guy, again, I'm looking at skills. You know, yes, some guys are going to be higher on my list because of what they did in terms of being winners. Cue me up, Marcus. Winners.
I got you. I got you. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on.
I want winners.
Yeah. but to make the list, you got to have skills. So Alex English, 47. Earl of Pearl Monroe, 46. Didn't watch him play a whole lot, so I'm going to slide right through that one. Bob McAdoo, 45. Dolph Shays, 44. Steve Nash, 43. Really was conflicted whether or not to include Nash. But honestly, anybody who can win two MVPs in the modern day deserves to be on the list. Now, these MVPs are somewhat debatable, okay? But he got them. Pistol Pete, 42. Now, if this was a list that incorporated college, like the college efforts, he'd be much higher. The same reason Bill Walton would be on my list, and he's not. And 41, Jason Kidd. So 50, Wes Unseld, Dave Collins, 49, Paul Pierce, 48, Alex English, 47, Earl of Pearl Monroe, 46, Bob McAdoo, 45. This is a cat who was hidden in Buffalo. Now, I recall him playing in a more reserve, like in a more sixth, seventh man, second unit guy with the Lakers in the early 80s when they won some championships. But I hear he was just dynamite. Dolph Shays, 44. Steve Nash, 43rd. Pistol Pete, 42. And Jason Kidd, 41. All right, what y'all got for me?
All right. Let me run this down real quick. Who'd you have at 40?
Oh, we going to 40?
Yeah, 50 to 40. Oh, we going to 41. Okay, my bad. We going to 41. All right. you know, I was on the fence on my own list. I was on the fence as to where to put Paul Pierce. Pierce is a good player. Pierce is a very good player. I don't know if he's in the 50 greats because, and this is why I left him off of my list. And he was one of those guys who kind of, if I had to do another 15, he might make that 15. I still have to debate whether or not he made that 15. But most of it is because when Paul was solo, Paul's teams were not very good. And even with a guy like KG, when KG was by himself, the man, the rock of those Minnesota teams, they were still some good teams. They didn't get out of the first round a lot, but they were still some good teams. I think Paul was really helped out by the fact that he got Ray and he got KG in there, and that allowed him to step his game up because he wasn't carrying such a heavy load. But that'd be one guy. And then Alex English, I didn't have him on my list at all. He was a guy who I didn't even consider. I know of Alex. I know he's a great player, but I've never viewed him as a top 50 guy. Great scorer, not much of a defender. I think he also benefited from a high-paced era, which is why his numbers looked the way they did. So that's one of the reasons I left Alex off. Those are really the only two complaints I got with your bottom five, or with your bottom 10.
I would challenge you with Paul Pierce. I mean, if you look at Paul Pierce, he came in the league in 1998. The first year he actually made the playoffs was 2002. This is the first year he really had a lot of people around him. This is when Antoine Walker was there. They made it to the third round of the playoffs. I mean, they made it to the conference finals in 2002, which, if you think about who they had, it was pretty darn impressive. He averaged 25 a game. 2003, again, they made it to the conference, which is the third round. And so even though they were really bad, his first couple of years, once he was a vet, I mean, they made the playoffs four or five straight years. Then they had.
But the East was really weak back then. The East was really weak during those years. It really was.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the East was so weak back in the video games, you know, you wouldn't even pick the East. You'd just rather just roll with the Blazers or somebody. Anthony Mason got to start one of those years, you know.
Yeah, I think Jamal McGlure made an all-star team, you know.
Yeah.
In that era, man. I feel you. Paul was one of those guys that I did consider really hard, and I really did look at everything. And, you know, his resume when it was just his team didn't impress me that much.
I'll just say this. Paul, there are only two other Celtics who scored over 20,000 points. That's Bird and Havlicek in a story franchise.
Havlicek stole the ball.
Paul took on a franchise. We got to put it in context. The Celtics were reeling as a franchise. They went through a death of one of their major players, major stars. I mean, he came in to a franchise that was reeling, a city that was reeling, and helped to stabilize it. And during that time, he still was one of the most feared cats in the league. You know, East was the best. Night in, night out, you knew he was doing work. I got him on my list. I'm not going to tell you where I have him. But I struggled with Paul Pierce. But I finally had to look at it and say, you know, this cat was putting in work, and he was putting in work. I mean, they finally, Calvary came towards the end of his career so far, but he's always never shied away from moments. He's near the top in a story franchise. So when you're talking about the Mount Rushmore franchises, it's the Celtics, the Lakers, and he's right up there in terms of production. So I would not gauge it. I understand where you're coming from on some of that stuff, but I would say when you really analyze his career, he's put in work.
And he has. And I'm not front, like I said, Paul is one of those guys I really hemmed and hawed about. Because I like Paul. I like his game. You know, you guys heard me talk about Paul Pierce's game. I love the way that brother plays. But here's an interesting fact. Never made a first-team All-NBA. Never made a first-team All-NBA. So even in his career, he's never been considered one of the elites of the elite. Just an interesting fact. That's one guy I would question. I really don't have him because it's not like you got him at 30. You know what I'm saying? You got him at what, 47, 48?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you got him on your list. I can't really argue with him being at 48. You know, he was a guy that I hemmed and hawed about. You know, it's a good conversation, though. It's a good conversation. Yeah. But that's an interesting fact. Never been first team NBA, all NBA.
How much is that? Like, how much of that is perception, though? You know, I mean, Paul is not, you know, Marcus, you clown him. You say he kind of shaped like a pear. You know, I mean, Paul's not the sexiest pick. You know, my man always looks like he's about 3 weeks overdue to get his fade cleaned up. You know,
can't really grow a beard. Sideburns is all patchy.
I mean, he's just really grimy. You know, and all the NBA sometimes just to me is like there's 10 or 15 guys that, well, most year there's 10 guys who could legitimately be first-team all-NBA players. And oftentimes, especially, I mean, say you out in the West and you a guard. Well, for the last 10, 12 years, instead of you having two opportunities to be first-team all-NBA, you really only got one because Kobe locking up one of them. You look in the East the last 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, LeBron going to have that locked up. You know, so I put weight in that, but I don't put a whole lot of weight into it. You know, Moses Malone, as good as he was, well, actually, Moses is a bad example. Hakeem Olajuwon, as good as he was only All-NBA first team twice. What?
That's right.
Yeah, and you know, I can see that. I think Akeem had more competition at his position. I don't really know who was keeping Paul from getting those nominations.
Well, you got Reggie out there. You had, depending on where it was gone, I mean, you had some players. I mean, at that spot, you had some players out there probably in the two spots. I mean, he was competing against
who? Yeah. In the 2000s, who were the ill twos in the East?
Yeah, Vince Carter.
Yeah, he had a 2 or 3 year run. Yeah, McGrady had a 2 or 3 year run.
Allen Iverson had a 12 year run. Okay.
That's right.
And I dig that. And so what I'm saying is that like McGrady is not on my list. Carter is not on my list. Carter is not on your list, and McGrady is not on your list. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, if there's a two guard who missed out because of Kobe, Kobe on my list. I can't fault the guy for not beating out Kobe. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
And I feel what y'all saying too. It's you know, I think you can look at it either way. That's the beauty of doing this, man. Because I'm sure that's gonna be catchy. Y'all gonna go through my list and be like, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? So it was just your turn. It was 5K's turn on this one. So let's keep it rolling. Let's keep it rolling. So 5K gave us his bottom 10. We're going to get into my bottom 10 next, and then before we close out the show, D-Will is going to give us his bottom 10. But right now we're going to slide into the 5 on the black-hand side. We got a real interesting 5 on the black-hand side this week, so let's go ahead and get into that.
5 on the black-hand side.
Yes, sir. All right. So for 5 on the black-hand side this week, we got kind of a hodgepodge of things. There's a lot of interesting stories going on out there. We're going to try to hit on 5 stories that kind of caught our eye. The first story I want to get into, we kind of touched on this last week, D-Wills and I. The BTS. The BTS has done it again. All right? We're in a situation, and it always goes like this. And again, I talked about this last week. Every year, around this time of year, everybody's saying the BTS is a horrible system, yada, 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 yada. So what? But the BTS has done it again. Again, there's always these crazy doomsday scenarios with the BTS that probably won't play out, but it's always interesting to talk about them. If LSU were to lose in the SEC title game, they probably would still play in the NCAA championship game. So then you would have LSU going against potentially Alabama with neither of them winning their conference championship. got two teams. Neither of them won their conference championship. These are your two front runners to play in the national championship game, and they didn't win their own conference. So that's the doomsday plot this year for the BCS to prove that it's a fraud. I feel it's a sham. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I'm tired of people whining that it's a sham just at the end of the season. It's always been a sham. Like, get over it. Either change it or shut up. And I'm at the point of shutting up, but I think this is the doomsday sequence scenario that we've been given this year. If LSU loses and still remains number one in the computers, which they probably would because they have such a lead, you would have two teams playing in a national championship game who did not win their conference, which is crazy. What do you guys think about that?
I've already complained about it. It is what it is. I've said that, you know, to be in a national championship game, you need to have won your conference championship. And people say, well, the SEC is the most difficult thing. And I always bring up the old adage, the ACC, you still only have one team go to the tournament. And I'm sure the second-place team is probably considered one of the top two or three teams in the country. But that's just the way it goes. So in some years, and for runs, maybe for 5 or 6 years, you got great teams in your conference. And so I think it takes away from, you know, what some of these other teams do around the country. It's just you could have a scenario where if LSU loses, they don't even win their conference championship. So the runner-up in the SEC and the runner-up in their division – play for the national. I mean, how can you justify that? Everybody feels good about it.
And then if you're in these other conferences and you're the Big Ten and you've added a team so you can have a conference championship game, this is basically a middle finger to you. F your conference championship game.
Right.
ACC, F your conference championship game. Pac-12, F your conference championship game. We don't care. We're taking SEC teams.
I mean, the team that should really be mad is Oklahoma State. I mean, yeah, they got that loss.
Man, everybody should be mad because it's basically like, why wouldn't be a BCS conference if, in the end, they're just going to take some SEC teams?
That's right.
Because that's basically what it is. If this, again, this will be the doomsday scenario, and every year there is a doomsday scenario. Last year it was, what if Boise State wins out and what if TCU wins out? Of course it didn't go down that way. But that was a doomsday scenario, and that was going to be the end of the BCS. And this is the scenario this year. LSU will probably win their conference championship game, and this will be a moot point by next week. But it's interesting to think about now. 5K, what's your perception of this whole situation?
It's a broken system. It's messed up. It needs to be fixed, but it won't because it's still very profitable. But I'm going to throw a curveball. So for some reason, I don't know why it is, but the BCS has kind of worked over the last 10 years it's been in play, or 12 years, however long it's been. I mean, I don't know if it's divine intervention or what, but think about if this was last year. Boise State goes undefeated. Or did they go undefeated last year or was it the year before?
I think it was the year before. Last year they lost to Nevada in the heartbreaker.
So
that kicker missed the field goal to OT, just like he did this year when they lost.
So let's say Boise State goes undefeated this year. We'd be looking at a national championship game between Boise State and likely LSU. I think I'd rather see LSU-Alabama.
Agreed.
It's a broken system, but for some reason it seems that it has put the, like, it's a better system than what it was before the BCS came along. So
yes.
Back in the day, you'd mess around and see the number one team playing in the Rose Bowl, the number two team playing in the Orange Bowl.
Right.
So it is improved, but it's still not right.
Right.
It's still not the best system possible. And so here's the thing. Anything else? I mean, this is why it frustrates people so much. Anything else, it'd be very obvious that this is not the best system. There's a better system out there, the playoff system. Let's go to that. But this kind of system makes way too much money. So it's like you got logic on one hand and you got profitability on the other hand. And that's why it's so depressing and frustrating, but it is what it is. And, you know, it's a broken system.
I completely agree. I think it is a broken system, but it is the system. And all of these teams buy into it at the beginning of the season, knowing what they have to do to make it. I don't think any of these coaches, any of these presidents, any of these ADs have any room to complain at this point. Again, it seems to work itself out every year, which is, again, why I'm always like, why are we complaining about the BCS again? Like, it's not going nowhere. Everybody's cool with it. Shut the F up. All right? It ain't going nowhere. It's just not. And it seems to always work itself out. So this was this year's doomsday scenario. So we're going to slide into number two in the five on the black hand. Go ahead.
I got one more thing, okay? I think what it's going to take is one of these powerhouses. So Big Blue, Notre Dame, Alabama, Texas, one of these schools where football is a religion. They're going to be on the outside looking in. And when that happens one year, there's going to be enough pressure to change this thing where they don't have enough leverage to convince their conference to back out of the BCS. And so you'll have a BCS without all the top teams involved with it. Or imagine if Alabama got left out this year, okay? And LSU, an alliance of their conference mates, say, you know what, we're not playing this national championship game. We're going to decline the invitation. And we're going to play in our own bowl, and we're not going to play at all. I think that's what it's going to take.
I agree. I think it'll take something radical like that. Will that happen? I doubt it. But I think that's what it would take. It would take one of the big boys, one of the blue bloods, getting left out, one of the people with influential alumni who are pushing this to get left out. And, you know, again, that may or may not happen because the BCS take care of its own. And that's the reason why you got two SEC teams who may not even win their conferences at the top of the heap. I think that's a great point. Sliding into number two. Now we get into the icky parts of sports. First, it was your boy Sandusky. Not any of our boys. We don't roll with cats like that. Not to be judgmental, but it is what it is. Now we got this cat, Bernie Fine, assistant coach at Syracuse, accused of having inappropriate sexual contact, whatever that means, with a couple young men, ball boys, when they were children, young adolescents, or whatever. What the hell do we make of this situation? I mean, damn. That's been my whole perspective on it. Another one? Like, D-Wills, help me out. What do you make of this situation? Shed some light on it for the people.
He talked this one up to me, and I was like, damn, I missed the dunk. When you look at Bernie, and I'm not going to be judgmental, but some of the pictures they have Bernie wearing them crazy-looking ties and looking crazy, you think, you know, yeah, guilty. The craziness about this, it's so different than the Penn State one. The wife, the tape with the wife, is just incredible about, and it sheds light into just, I mean, it unpacks what we have in society on so many different levels about the relationship, the fact she knows this, she knew this, allegedly. You know, I think they confirmed that it was her voice. Now she's coming out and saying the tape was doctored, but when you hear what she says, you can't doctor that much to make it not say what she's saying. And so, you know, it's a lesson. I think it's a lesson from, there's a couple of things. This situation is different than Penn State from what we know. In that situation, but Boeheim should have learned a lesson. And this is to all coaches. If you have something like this happening, when you're confronted with it, don't go into defense mode. It doesn't mean you don't support your boy or your girl or whatever it is. What you should say, and this is a great statement to say, is to say, this is an unfortunate incident. I think it's important for both to protect both parties that we let the law in due course follow, that we let the legal process play out. It allows for him to be supportive of his guy, Bernie, without coming out saying this kid's alive. So I think beyond, now he's backtracking. And so it just says what we're seeing right now is there's a shift in higher education now. And someone was talking about this the other day that there's a power shift to back to presidents and chancellors because of the fact that now, even in this case, you see Secret Service. When you start seeing Secret Service and Department of Justice, those are the kind of people you want showing up. And U.S. Department of Education isn't far behind. So now the federal government is beginning to get involved in these cases because there's a public – it's creating a shift that is going to force chancellors and presidents to really rethink relationship. You're not going to see the Joe Paternos of the world as much anymore. I mean, I think people are seeing that the collateral damage to an institution because you don't take control of this stuff can be devastating. And so I think it's unfortunate because of the victims that we have to go through this. I mean, this is a person that Behan knew for, what do you say, about 50 years? So it's a crazy. I'm trying to get my head around it. If it's allegedly if he was a ball boy traveling with them on the trip, it's just all these things and what this means for, you know, how they treat camps, how they treat. I mean, it's just the institutions got to rethink everything that's happening as it relates to sports. And that's something that I'm hoping people will learn from this. But also I think for these coaches and for these programs, you know, people need to start doing some inventory. You know, people need to start – I'm not going to be surprised if some of these institutions start hiring private folks to be looking into some of this stuff now because they don't want to float up and to kind of do an assessment of what's happening with their programs. Man, I mean, this is costing people. It's not only costing these young people, but institutionally it's costing a lot. So that's all I can say, man. This is so crazy. I listened to the tape, and I didn't even know what to – I listened to the wife, and I was just like – I couldn't understand why she would say the perspective she had. I mean, she was just – I mean, they just basically – their marriage is all show.
Yeah.
So it's so disturbing on so many levels. I don't know. On the biggest level, the big picture level, it's about institutions taking this back.
So here's a question I want to throw out before we move on, because we're not going to stay on this for too long, because I think this involves a greater conversation. This isn't the segment for it. But just give me both of you guys. Well, I want both of you guys to weigh in. Does Boeheim survive this? Just give me real quick.
Yeah, he survives, but I think he loses power, but he survives.
Okay.
Unless they come up with something crazy, he survives.
All right. 5K, Boeheim still in?
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Let's keep it rolling. The next one, number three, the Tebow situation.
Tebow.
This mother, yeah. He's not going to go quietly into the night, man. of course, part of it is the defense. Of course, part of it is who they played and the opponents and the quality of opponents. But damn that, he won an NFL football game. When it's all said and done, this cat is still going out there winning football games. And I don't think that's what Elway and the brass in Denver intended. 5K. What are we to make of this situation in Denver?
It's perplexing. I mean, you don't know how they're winning. I mean, Tebow, he looks horrible as a like. No, he looks horrific. He does. You know, I was just talking to Phil Mack for, you know, before we got on the air, and I should have asked him because he and his wife live in Denver right now. But I mean, Tebow mania, it's just kind of like, how are they winning? But then you take a step back and it's like their defense is solid. I mean, their defense is getting the job done. They're getting to the quarterback. They're covering. They're doing what they need to do. Tebow is not turning over the ball since that Detroit game, you know, and they're controlling the clock. So when you look at that, it kind of makes sense, but you just wonder, can this style be sustained? Now, it's fun to watch. It is. It's good TV. It's good drama. I happen to have him on my fantasy squad. I snatched him up a few weeks ago when they announced he was going to be starting. And, I mean, he's performed well for me, okay? He's been – Tebow's been good to me. He's an affable kid. He's a likable kid, okay? And so I kind of root for him. I do. But he's such a polarizing topic. I mean, almost when you look at LeBron, people are either like him or don't. Tebow, you either like him or you don't. And I like him. He's been good to me. That's my take on Tebow.
D-Wills, what's your quick take? What's your quick take on Tebow, man?
I had the same feeling about Tebow as I had a feeling about George Bush. I couldn't believe he won the second election for what he produced. It's just like, how did he win it? And are people listening to what I'm listening to? And same thing, are people seeing what I'm seeing? And I think he's just created this culture of winning that the defense, sometimes with teams, know if you got somebody, even if he doesn't play, if you know you got a finisher, you're going to do everything you can to get into that. And then what happens is the opposing team starts to buy into the myth. So they get a little nervous. They're like, hey, what is this kid going to do? And you create this scenario. This is just Denver handled it so poorly from the beginning. And, you know, you remember what I said when I threw it in there? I said, you know, they're going to do what I thought they would do is, like, give the fans – We're gonna get him, you know. We'll give you as much as you want, and you're gonna see how bad he is. You remember I said that early on?
Oh yeah.
Like, he's gonna make him pay, and that young boy just he went down and said a few whatevers, prayed a little bit after taking that whooping with Detroit, and just got himself focused. And I don't know how to explain it. The bottom line is, this is where Elway is going to make his legacy. He's gonna have to just say, I know it was great. It was a great ride. We're going in a different direction. And he just wanted to take the heat because you can't win long term on it. Because the offseason of studying this, figuring it out, unless this kid can improve in the passing game on a consistent basis, NFL coordinators will figure him out. It's kind of like the when they're running the stuff up in Miami,
the Wildcat.
You know, you give these guys off season looking at enough tape, they'll figure it out. And next year you won't have the same kind of results. So that's part of you as an organization. You can't listen to the streets too much. You got to do what you got to do, and just enjoy the ride.
All right. Last two.
We gonna do these quick because we about last. We be heading into the last half hour. Me and D Wills both got to unveil our. Bottom 10, and we got to get the pick 6 in. All right? So, Ndamukong Suh, let's make this one real quick and breezy. Like, where we at on this guy, man? I like him, but I just can't. I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with him. Some screw loose up there. Help me out. You guys are both Michigan guys. You guys grew up on the Lions, for better or for worse. What's the word out of the MI?
Well, I mean, I think they love him, and I think he's young. And, I mean, the most egregious thing is what he did this past week, stepping on someone. But I think some of the other stuff was borderline. I mean, it's tough on defenses in the NFL. We just got to be honest. You can't be a safety in the league. You can't do it. It's just tough. He realized he's got to try and change the culture, and he's just been going all out on it. And now it's time to come back. It's up to the coach to get him refocused in the vets. He'll be fine. He's a smart kid. He'll take his two games off. He'll be fine. His team will mess up because he's gone, and he'll have to learn from it. But I think long term, he's fine.
I think it's tough for the coach to say much, you know, to keep him in line after what the coach did with Harbaugh.
This is true. This is true. You raise a good point.
You know, so, I mean, for better or for worse, these Lions are passionate. They're making the news. They're still a good football team. I still got faith in them. I think they'll still make the playoffs. He made his statements after the game. And, you know, ESPN, as he's making the statements, they're just showing the video to contradict his statements.
That's what they do.
That's right. You know, I was trying to get up. I was losing my balance. And then they're playing in slow-mo.
No.
No, you weren't.
Right.
So, but at the end of the day, that's a nasty place to work, man, on a defensive line, the line of scrimmage. I mean, these are some barbarians. I mean, these are not scholars there. You got to be nasty.
Yeah.
Play there, and, you know, we get really uptight when people cross these lines, you know, but at the same time, we want this nastiness. We want this. So, you know, to me, I don't have a huge problem with it. I don't. But he's got to keep it in check because at this point, like Devon said, he's hurting his team.
All right. Excellent takes. I agree, man. I like the kid. He seems very articulate. He seems like, you know, he knows better. But I think, again, we ask him to go into this place in order to be effective at his job. And, you know, that place ain't his happy place. He ain't spending the 60 minutes he's on the field, however many snaps he's out there. He ain't spending that time in his happy place. And so when you get this kind of stuff coming from him, it is what it is. I mean, if you want him to dominate the way he's been dominating, guys, you're going to get this craziness to come out because it takes a crazy guy to play that way. You know, when he taking out quarterbacks and he's running through a line of 300-pound men like a madman, he might be in that particular moment. A madman. So when you finally take a peek behind the curtain and you see that, you know, it's for real. You kind of gotta, you know, he's gonna get what he's got, and he stepped over the line, and the line is known, and we're gonna move on. But yeah, it is what it is. Now, last one. Try to be quick on this one. This one is a little bit harder to digest. In a small bite, Urban Meyer going to the Ohio State University. Is this going to work? And when I say is this going to work, what I mean is, remember who he's going to be successful, but remember who he's replacing. Remember who he's replacing and what his predecessor did. Can he best his predecessor? That's what I mean by will this work. Will he best his predecessor? Because he can be successful, but if he doesn't match the success of his predecessor, well, that's how it is at these schools. If you don't do as well as the guy before you, then it didn't work. No matter how good you do, if you didn't do as well as the dude before you, this really didn't work. So will Urban Meyer do better than Tressel?
Got a pass on this one. I mean, I'm so conflicted. You know, I think Ohio State made the best possible hire they could make.
Absolutely. Agreed.
And I'm just interested to see. Wait a minute, I'm just listening to myself. I said I'm on pass, and I just start talking. Yeah. So, I'm on pass. I'm on pass for the time.
He will.
be a, he's a good hire. I think he's entering a different Big Ten than Trestle did. I think the Big Ten is on the way back up, and so I think he's going to be competitive. You know, a lot of it's going to depend on what the sanctions look like, because Trestle didn't come in on these kind of sanctions, and so I think he's just coming in with a different scenario. I know that doesn't mean much to the Ohio State fans, but I think eventually he'll be successful. But I think, you know, I think programs like Michigan are bouncing back. I think Wisconsin, I think with Nebraska coming in, I think the Big Ten is going to be, Michigan State is gaining some traction. I just think it's going to be a difficult place to win year in and year out. And so, you know, will he win a national championship? I think he'll win a national championship, you know. You know, so I think there's possibility for that. I think he's just a good coach. In my prediction, probably over the next 5 years, you'll probably see at least one or two Big Ten teams win one. So, and I think he'll be part of that. So I think the competitive edge is going up in the Big Ten, and I think he'll be good. I just think he's got more hurdles than Trestle came under.
Okay. I think it's going to be hard for him to top what Trestle did. I think he's up for it. I think he's up to it. I think you're right. He's going to have some interesting challenges, and we'll just have to, you know, wait and see. All right. So that's five on the black hand side. We got about 28 minutes left, so I'm going to bust through my bottom 10 real quick and then let the guys chew into my list. So let's go ahead and get into it. All right. At 50. I have Dennis the Worm Rodman. At 49, I got Ginobili. At 48, I have Joe Dumars. At 47, I got Dominique Wilkins. At 46, I got the Chief, Robert Parrish. At 45, I have AI, Allen Iverson. At 44, I got Gary Payton. At 43, I got Steve Nash. At 42, I got Earl the Pearl Monroe. And at 41, I got Dave the Busher. And me and 5K talked about the Busher off air before we came on. You know, he was one of those guys I didn't really know what to do with. I never watched him play. So I did a little research on him. And I couldn't find a poor word about the brother. So, I mean, for all accounts, he was a rugged guy. He could shoot the ball, played excellent D. He was on the top 50 list. Seems like he's got a decent track record. Got, you know, a lot of first team All-NBAs, you know, accolades up the wazoo. So I plugged him in at 41.
So this is my question. How can you have Ginobili on the list? You can't have Paul Pierce on the list.
Three rings.
Yeah, but that was Duncan. I just can't. Ginobili made some big plays, but he has a, I mean, sustainable on a career appearance in terms of just, you know, I went back and looked at the All-Star list of those first from 2000 on with Pierce. I mean, it was an interesting dynamics in terms of who got an All-Star. He was always consistent. People were dropping off the list, on the list, but he was always on the list. And so I just can't. Ginobili's the one. I like your other picks. And actually, Joe Dumars, I struggle with, you know, I mean, I'm a Pistons fan. I love the Bad Boys. I rethought it. You know, he's someone he's definitely in that next group. I can get him into the 50. But I could understand why you would have Joe Dumars on the list. Ginobili was the one on your list that just jumped off the list. I don't have the Busher on my list, but Ginobili is the one that jumped off the list for me.
And let me explain myself with Manu. You know, I think for me, Manu, I think if Manu was on a team by himself, he would have put up comparable numbers to a Paul Pierce. And again, I'm not saying that Pierce was a slouch at all. You know what I mean? I hemmed and hawed about Paul and where to put Paul. Ginobili, though, he's been in the playoffs pretty much his entire career.
But is Ginobili the best? Let's just take foreign players. I don't know if Ginobili is the best foreign player that's played in the league.
Are you crazy?
I'm not sure. You got
who's
you
better?
Got, what's my boy that played for New Jersey?
Dirk? You come on now. Before this year, Dirk was a biatch. Let's be real. None of us was on the Dirk bandwagon before this year. Dirk's bandwagon was bare ass empty.
I would say Dirk was an elite player who needed a ring.
Better.
What's that?
I would say Olajuwon was certainly better.
Yes, yes. If you count Akeem Olajuwon as a, you ain't gonna get no argument from me on that one. If you count Akeem Olajuwon as an international player, hell yeah, Akeem was better.
I would put Petrovic ahead of. I might put Petrovic ahead of
you. And you might, but Petro didn't play that long. And you might put Arvidas in there, but Arvidas didn't play that long.
Right, we're talking about NBA folks.
I don't know if you have on your.
So you can say that. You can say that maybe he's not the best ever player, period, to come out of Europe. But I think he's the best European player. And you know, I'm not even gonna say that because I have Dirk ranked ahead of him. I actually have Dirk ranked ahead of him.
Yeah,
but
we haven't got to Dirk yet.
But I think he's the best perimeter player to come out of Europe.
Like Ginobili didn't even come. A perimeter player, I'll put.
Or not even Europe, just non-American player, because he ain't even from Europe.
From Europe. Right. I'm just saying, I'm just international. That's all I was trying to say.
Yeah.
that's what I'm struggling with. That's what I'm because Gary Jr., I see you as a guru. When you said Ginobili, I was like.
You said Ginobili. You said 49 Ginobili. I was like.
I said, this is a guru. I said, I got to hear this one. He's about to mix up some soup on me today. And that one. I said, this chef is about to tell me something I need to know.
Yeah, Ginobili has always, throughout his career, he has always been clutch. He's always been, again, I have him in here the same way I think you have a Joe Dumars in. Joe Dumars is on my list is the same way I have Ginobili on my list. I think circumstance of where he was and the structure of his team prevented him from getting the accolades that a lot of other guys got. But I still think, I got Ginobili on my list at 49.
But you can make a better argument for Paul Pierce than Ginobili for all that stuff.
If you go on by just off of individual accolades. But I think, I don't know, I think if you swap Paul Pierce and Ginobili, I think Ginobili puts up the same.
You put Paul Pierce on that sanitary.
Right, and I think you put Paul Pierce on your list then.
I
think you see Ginobili differently. I think you see Ginobili differently if he was in a situation where he wasn't playing with a Duncan or Tony Parker, just like you see Paul Pierce differently. But I think if you put Paul Pierce in that situation where Ginobili was, we would see him differently.
But Paul was the truth for the truth. You could tell he commanded the double team. He came out. Paul was always – he's always been a lead player in the league.
So has Ginobili.
Ginobili's kind of come up through that, but I just can't see him.
Nah, man, you sleeping.
Even in the West Coast, in the conference, Ginobili's a great player, but you can't put him up above anybody during that year over in the West Coast.
Who would you put above – Western Conference, who would you put above at the two spot? Who would you put above Ginobili in the West in the 2000s? Who would you put above Ginobili? Kobe. That's it.
You put Kobe. You have. Let me go through this whole thing.
Yep, go through it. I'll wait. Cat Williams. I'll wait.
Let me bring my whole team. I'm trying to pull my stuff up. Go ahead.
Check it on that, Devon. I got a couple of questions for the game changer as well.
Yes.
Just a side note, we actually had Steve Nash both at 43, which is interesting. Iverson, you had at 45.
Yep.
He's a bit higher on my list. Talk about why you put him there.
One end of the court, really. You couldn't get much out of AI on the other end.
Okay.
That's really what hurt AI, in my opinion. One of the greatest scorers ever. One of the most athletic players ever. But ultimately, and that's why I got a guy like Dominique down there too. Dominique was a decent defender, but, you know, his offense was light years ahead of his defense. And that's why a guy like Carmelo is not on my list at all and wasn't even considered. And that's why a guy like Alex English wasn't really kind of in the conversation with me, is because though they're super skilled offensively, there are a lot of guys who are really skilled offensively but didn't play D. So I think of those guys, AI is one of the greatest of those guys who were amazing offensive players but didn't give you much on the other end. So that's why I have him down there.
Okay, I can buy that because I actually had Iverson in my 20s. But based on your rationale, I think that's a bit too high for him. Robert Parrish. Now, I didn't see him play much. And considering you're younger than me, talk to me a little bit about Robert Parrish.
Well, the Chief was a fairly effective and dominant player early in his career. He got with the Celtics, and again, I'm rewarding him for being a winner, being a complimentary piece. I put him ahead of guys like Walton. When I listed, because the way I did mine was I broke it down by position, and I went top 10 to 11 in each position. Some positions I only went 9 deep, and he was my 10th center. He was my 10th center after Ewing, and I actually put Mike in on my list. And I do understand your logic on Mike, and I'm not mad at that. You know, I was debating between Mike and Cowens, and I went with Mike for the historical significance of it. But I definitely, that was one that I was kind of not sure about. But the Chief, you know, I think the Chief again. I think this was another guy at the bottom of my list. I got a lot of guys who either scored highly or who were one kind of one-end players where they gave you a lot on one end and they were all-time greats at one end, or these guys were really excellent players who may not have the numbers because they were on great teams. So that's my 40, my 50 through 41, that's why you got guys like Dumars, Rodman, the Chief, and then on the other side of it, you got guys like Monroe, AI, Dominique, so Nash, guys who were offensive geniuses, but defensively they didn't give you a whole lot. And then you got a guy like Peyton, who was a defensive genius. He gave you a bit on offense, but when you match up his offense to defense, you're definitely looking at Peyton as a defensive, you know, if you're going to put together an all-time defensive team, Peyton is going to be on that team.
Now, I like your Dennis Rodman pick.
I like Rodman.
Most of the top 50s you see out there, you won't see Rodman in it. But the way he affected the game, I think
right.
He's the third consideration. One guy that I considered putting on was Ben Wallace, who I kind of
I thought about that, too.
Now, had Ben Wallace had given me another 2 or 3 years at
right.
top level, he would have been on a list. But it was like, 4 or 5 years of dominant play just was not enough.
Yep, I agree. Otherwise, Grant Hill would have been in the 30s with me.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, Grant was a dude for a minute. So any other areas, you know, I had Nash lower. I hemmed it hard about putting Nash above Peyton. I think Nash's point guard skills were way ahead of Peyton. Nash is probably one of the best shooters ever in the league. But, again, Nash is a sieve defensively. You can take what you want from him. I probably could score a couple buckets on Steve Nash. I'm in today.
So over that period of time, the top two people most consistent over that time were Kobe and Ray Allen.
Yeah.
I mean, a whole bunch of other people made it over him. I mean, you had times where Steve Francis made it. You had times where some other folks made it. But the most consistent two people, the two guards, were Kobe and Ray Allen were dominant guards out west.
And to me, I think it's debatable. I think the only person that is not debatable whether or not they were better than Manu Ginobili, and I don't think it's very much of a debate, is Kobe. I think if you put Manu in a situation where Ray Allen was in, during that era, if the Seattle Supersonics had got a call from San Antonio saying we'll trade you Manu Ginobili for Ray Allen, they would have took Ginobili.
But that's not even going to the folks in the East. So we're just talking about the guys out West. We're not talking about the two guards in general. How did Ginobili's entry pick? Are you making an argument for him? How many All-Star games did he make?
Two.
So I'm just trying to figure it out. You get Ginobili's probably gonna be the one that sticks out when we look at all our lists. I mean, I'm probably gonna have something in myself, so I'm not gonna say anything because I'm a little older than y'all, so some stuff I might throw out, y'all might be looking at me like I stole the government cheese. So I'm not like I'm crazy. I feel bad. All right. So how do you want to handle this game changer? We got a little bit of time left. Do you want me to do mine right now?
Yeah, I want you. Yeah, you do yours right now. We get to pick six. Otherwise, we'll put it on the Facebook page, which has been hopping the last week. You know, we got some hits on the Facebook page. So keep checking that out, Real Sports Guys on Facebook. If you're not friending us yet, friend us, like it, or whatever you need to do on Facebook. I don't know what the thing is nowadays. They've changed it up so many times. Just when you get a hang of it, they switch it up on you.
That's the new Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to have D-Wheels. Go ahead and drop your bottom 10.
And I'm going to say part of what I also did, I did do some more historical people because, you know, I do believe in folks that changed, you know, either forced you to change the rules, had significant shifts in the game. So I got some folks a little farther back on my list, but I guess that's all right. So at 50, I got Paul Pierce. At 49, I got George Mikan. At 48, I got Steve Nash. At 47, I got Walt Frazier. At 46, I got Dolph Shays. At 45, I got Willis Reed. At 44, I got Dwayne Wade. At 43, I got Gary Payton. At 42, I got Dave Collins. And at 41, I got Dennis Rodman.
Okay, you had Rodman way higher than I did.
And I debated on Rodman, but I felt like, and this is the argument, I think it's one of the things you talked about. Rodman was so good at what he did. He was so elite at what he did. But it was,
yeah.
I played him at that bottom part because I felt like he was a game changer all the time. And he did so much in the game that changed the game. And to be able to be that elite and be that much of a commodity in the game and be a dominant scorer, there's something about that.
Yeah.
So Rob is a little bit higher than probably I would have.
And I'm with you there with Rodman. Actually, a teaser, I actually have Rodman at 31. Okay, so... I mean, I'll talk more about it next week, but I'm with you with Rodman. I think he impacted the game where other teams had to game plan for him.
Yeah, you had to come in and really be able to address. You know, a person like Dave Collins is just, you know, a dominant one of his all-time Celtics and winners. I've got Wade in here, and Wade might be a little higher on other people's list or whatever, but, you know, I have a few what I would call modern, like today-type players, and I think Wade is you know, in the era we have Kobe, and Kobe's really high on this list for me. Wade, there you could argue, and I know Game Changer I've talked about this a little bit, that there were times when Wade might have been the most dominant player in the NBA, and even that year when he got hurt or when Shaq left and just kind of put the game on his back, ultimate competitor, big game player, big moments. You know, it's kind of – he's feared whenever he steps on the court. Even when he's playing against elite players, guys like Kobe wake up when he's there. He's someone that I could have had him a little bit higher, but I have some of these other cats that I think – have a little bit too long, more longevity. If you ask me in like 3 or 4 years, he's going to move up the list significantly. Dolph Shays was considered a tough cover on both ends. When people like Bill Russell talk about how tough he was to guard and kind of player he's going to be, and Walt Frazier was just the man, you know, with the Knicks, some great Knicks teams,
I have Walt higher up. I got Walt at about 32.
Yeah, and I was gonna put Walt higher, but I got some other people that I might have put up there, and I could easily be moved Walt up. Maybe Walt's the kind of guy on people's list. He could be where I have him. He could be. There's some people that might have him in the top 20.
on some lists you look at. So Frazier, that kind of guy that you can make an argument on so many different levels.
Devon, talk a little bit about Willis Reed.
Yeah, I was going to ask that same. He read my mind, man. Because I left him off my mind altogether. Because I just didn't really know where to place him. I didn't know where to put him in. I didn't have a context. You know, you got the Willis Reed game, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I didn't get a chance to see him play a lot, but what I would say is that constant, big-time player in terms of champion, carry teams on his back, you know, seven-time All-Star. He was a two-time NBA Finals MVP, showed up in the big game, you know, averaged 18, 12 rebounds, assists, but in his era, he was someone that people paid attention to. You know, if I were to put things in terms of eras, I think the 80s was really for me, when I'm looking at the game, was like probably the greatest time in the NBA. I would say the 80s, I was thinking about this, I would say it was almost like I look at, you know, hip-hop sometimes. You say, you know, maybe from about 84 to about 95, 96, depending on y'all young cats might push a little farther out or a little less. Sometimes the NBA dynasty or big time kind of flows along with hip-hop in a sense. But I thought the 70s was an emerging time, and definitely he was a dominant player in the 70s, well-respected. Great rebound. I think if you had the kind of the all-defensive team stats going back as long as you would, he would have had an even longer kind of trend on defense. But in a big market, he carried big shoulders. That's what I would say about it. There's sometimes, I mean, there's a lot of great players, but there are certain places where you're great that you got to get some chalk. And if you're great in New York, you're great in L.A., you're great in Boston, you got to pay attention because it's not enough to just be a player. In those environments, there's a lot more pressure that comes along with it.
Okay.
So I have a problem with Mikan. Okay, you know, it's not all going to be peaches and cream here, Devon. I had a problem with Mikan. Let me hear your rationale. I already gave mine earlier.
Well, one of my criteria that I set was, you know, and I don't get too much into eras like this. I mean, at some point, I do think there's an element, and I had a debate on myself. I said, you know, he did play at a time where he was kind of bridging around this whole idea of integration. And so that was something I was toying with. But the thing about it is they call him Mr. Shot Clock. So he's the reason why there's an NBA shot clock. He's the reason why. So for his time, he was the first big man. And I think for me, I try to give some credit to people who are pioneers and game changers in a way that I think you should. I think sometimes we get so caught up in the times, in the current times, and whether or not they do it, you have to get started from somewhere. And I thought that because he was such an impact on the game and just being the history of the game, I felt like Mikan was. Now, most people, there are a lot of people, if you look at lists like, some of the magazines, some of these people have Mikan much higher. I felt like where I had him was the right place in terms of what he did in history. I didn't have him way up there. I felt like this was the right spot for him. So I would have him at 49. You know, if you look at a lot of lists, George Mikan is much farther up the list.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike is a guy that, because Slam Magazine, I really liked the top 50 they did a couple of years ago because they had a big issue with the one the NBA did. So I looked at that one, and they had Mike in the 30s.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I based my list on. I just kind of moved people around and added 10 or 15 people that they didn't mention. And Mikan, he started at 30, and he just kept moving down. he's like 61 on my list right now. You know, he's like that next tier. You know, I just got so uncomfortable. I mean, kind of like the Willis Reed thing. When I think of Willis Reed, I think of a guy with a chain around his neck on the court, coming out the tunnel at Madison Square Garden. That's the only film I've ever seen on the cat.
Yeah.
You know, and I think of him with black peppered hair like he has today. You know, I'm just not familiar with the cat. But another guy I was curious about was Gary Payton. I actually had him a little bit higher on my list than you and Marcus did. Marcus had him at 44, and you had him at 43, Devon. Did you have any dissonance about keeping him in the list? Was he kind of borderline for you?
No, actually, I had Gary
higher.
He was
in for me. He was in.
Yeah, I had him higher. And then I went back looking at some of my list. You know what, for me, what would have helped Gary was getting that championship.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been getting the championship with the Lakers.
No.
It would have been getting the ring with Kemp.
Yeah.
To me, that was his team. That was his team, and he was a piece of that team, a key piece of that team, and getting the championship during those years, which would have meant he would have had to go through Mike.
Yeah.
But one, to me, would have put him way up higher on the list than he is.
And I have to blame that on George. I have to blame that on George Karl. You know, I mean, he got the ring. He got the late ring later in chance. So I would say get the ring in Seattle. And I blame that on George Karl, because Gerald Karl should have put him on Mike from the beginning. He had him off guarding. He had Percy Hawkins on him, on Mike from the beginning. So I blame that on George Karl from the beginning. When I watched that series, I almost got sick. So, but, yeah, I would like to see him do something in Seattle. But I could definitely be swayed to push him up farther up. I love Gary Payton. He's one of my all-time favorites. I mean, you can make a legitimate argument to push him up into the 30s, into the 20s, if you really wanted to. So, I mean, wherever he fits, he just kept moving down my list.
Yeah, and when I started to kind of lay out my point guards and comparing him to other guys I had in my list of point guards, I had to move him down a bit. You know, like I said, those are real. I had Nash slightly ahead of him, mostly because, you know, I think Nash. Yeah, I think because Nash had a little bit more going on offensively, but ultimately, you know, both of them, I really did. Like, he was definitely on my list, but I definitely hemmed and hawed a lot when thinking about where to place him ultimately. On my list.
This is a great conversation, fellas. Great conversation.
Yeah, man. This is going to get more interesting as we get further and deeper into this, man. I hope the listeners continue to hang on and hang with us through this as we keep going through each set of 10 through the next coming weeks. Actually, why don't we just do the pick six in the after hours section, man? We're just going to keep it rolling in the after hours. So keep, you know, you'll miss it, but you'll catch it with your download. If you're a downloader, you'll catch the after hours section and you'll get the pick six. We'll also put it up on Facebook real quick, and we'll keep it rolling right on through. Hey, you guys got dogs of the week?
Oh,
I got a dog of the week. My dogs of the week are David Stern and Billy Hunter for getting it done.
That's right.
Get the job done. Those are my guys for the week. Phil T, you had a dog of the week. Who's your dog of the week, man?
Mine was Urban Meyer, but honestly, after watching this Ohio State beat up on Duke tonight, go with the Buckeyes.
He will.
My dog of the week is Monty Ball, man. That kid is. Oh, he put something together. They put it on Penn State. But I think he got to get more Heisman Trophy consideration.
Yeah, you think they break the record?
Yeah, I think he might break.
Yeah, I think he's got a shot, man. He's definitely got a shot. I can see him getting three in the next couple of games. He got two games to do it. You know, I can see him getting three of each. Maybe he finishes with 40. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. So right now, we're in the after-hour section. Let's get into this pick six real quick.
Let me get a pen so I can write down the picks. Man, last week with the games we had Detroit against Green Bay, the New York Giants against the New Orleans Saints, and the San Francisco 49ers against the Baltimore Ravens. D. Wills, you and Phil T went Detroit, New Orleans, and Baltimore. Y'all hit on two of those. Y'all struck out on one. I went Green Bay, New York, and San Francisco. Damn, I lost on two. And we all kind of went chalk on the college games. We had Wisconsin versus PSU, Penn State. And for those of you who don't live in Madison, which is basically everybody but me, funny, Wisconsin threw up a big-ass blue ribbon on the side of the UW Fieldhouse to make a statement out against anti-child abuse when Penn State rolled into town, as if child abuse just got bad this week. As if child abuse just became a bad thing last weekend. You know what I'm saying? So a little psychological warfare, I think, was going on between the athletic departments on that one. We had LSU versus Arkansas. We all took LSU. They won. And then we had Stanford versus Notre Dame, and we all took Stanford, and they won. So, you know, you guys picked up another game on me. To hell with the both of you. But it's all good. Love you still. All right. This week, we got Green Bay at the New York Giants. The Giants are coming off a couple of losses. What is this? They lost three straight games.
Yeah.
They're trying to pick up the pieces. Eli is still better than Phillip Rivers.
Not really. He's coming back to the pack like I thought he would.
I think this is going to be, if there was a game where Green Bay could slip up, this could be that game on the road. Going into New York. New York has their backs against the wall. They need to win this game to kind of stay in the hunt for a wild card or stay in a divisional race in the NFC East. If there's a game that Green Bay could lose, this could be it. But I'm still taking Green Bay to keep it rolling. Like I said, we're connected. I'm undefeated. They're undefeated. And as long as they're undefeated, I will be undefeated. So me and Green Bay, we have this symbiotic relationship going on right now. So I'm still rolling with the Packers to stay undefeated because I need to stay undefeated because I've been talking a lot of shit. Phil T, who'd you say you were taking in this one, Green Bay?
I'm going with Green Bay.
Okay. All right, D-Wills, who you taking?
I ain't messing with Rodgers, man. I'm going with Green Bay.
I'm telling you, man, Rodgers has been. Man, if we had to redo our rankings, man, where you putting Rodgers? I don't have a choice but to put him at number one right now. Earlier in the season, we went through our top five QBs. I'd have to put Rodgers at number one.
Yeah, he got to be at number one. I'm not going to mess with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he right now, he want to stomp Brett Favre out.
When he doesn't complete 80% of his passes, you're like, man, he had a bad game today.
Yeah. And he wants – he never come out and publicly said this. I was talking to somebody off the, earlier today before the show. I said he never come out and said anything bad about Brett. Brett said a lot of stuff, taking shots at him, kind of. And what he understands is he just wants to chip away at Brett's legacy. He knows by winning another Super Bowl, and hell, if he can go undefeated and what that would mean, I mean, that he's got that burning. He's still got that burning desire. That's the scary thing about it.
I'm going Russ and Judge. I'm going Russ and Judge and say he's three.
Three?
Yeah. You know, to me, what's happening in Indianapolis just confirms that Peyton Manning's one. Okay? Argue with that one. I'll wait. Go ahead.
I was saying active players. I didn't know Peyton was even in the conversation. But
I think if Peyton's even in the conversation, I'm putting Rodgers ahead of Peyton. I dig you on that logic, though. I agree with you on that logic because there's no way you can't say – if I had a vote for MVP, I might vote for Peyton Manning.
Right.
Because the Colts, man, don't even look like an NFL franchise no more.
Well, you know, somebody mentioned it. Maybe it was Clayton or somebody saying that there's a chance Aaron Rodgers may not win the MVP unanimous. You know, getting all the vote, had a hard time with that word. You know, because somebody might get smart and vote Peyton Manning as the most valuable player. You know, and you know, I don't think that's right, but yeah, I mean,
it might happen.
Yeah, I mean, Indianapolis looks horrible, man. They look horrific.
They look terrible, man. Like, those guys don't even look like, I mean, Reggie Wayne was damn near all pro, elite receiver.
Yeah.
You know, Joseph Addai was a functional NFL running back. The defense wasn't terrible. It wasn't great, but it wasn't awful. All the offensive line was viewed as pretty damn solid.
And I think part of it might be, I know Peyton is a big part of it, but I also think it says a lot about the other people who aren't true leaders on that team. Because they got locker room issues. They got leadership issues. Cat's not stepping up. I don't see them getting emotional. There's something going on in that locker room.
And that's the one thing that I do give Tebow props for, is that there's a palpable and seems like a real effect that he has on the way other cats play. And I think Peyton has that same effect, but Peyton can also throw the football beyond 8 yards. Because, you know, that defense has been balling. And I think part of it is because they know they have a chance to win games. And they know if they play well, because the other thing about Tebow that I think people ain't really peeping is that the cat's only throwing one pick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not throwing the ball a whole lot. Mm-hmm. When he's throwing it, he's not giving it up. And he ain't fumbling. As much as he's been running, he ain't fumbling the ball. Running quarterbacks usually becomes a problem, is them putting the ball on the ground.
And they say part of the throwing is when he's off, nobody can catch it.
What you said, ain't nobody catching those.
Somebody in product is just bad throws altogether. He was a back, they're like, damn. He's off the mark. I'm going to pull a hamstring trying to go up for that one.
Right.
I got to stay on the field.
Yeah, the defensive backs don't even put their hands up. They're like, who the hell are you throwing? Are you throwing over my head? Who back down?
Yeah, it's so sad because it's like when he actually, like, every time he throws the ball, it's like, ooh, he's about to get a completion. You know, I mean, you know, it's like going to see 7-year-olds play basketball and the score is like 8-4.
Yeah.
You actually make a hoop, everybody gets excited, you know. Now, I'm on the edge a little bit more because he's in my fantasy squad, but, you know, I mean, it's just sad. And what I don't get is the last 3 or 4 games he started last year, he threw the ball decent under Josh McDaniels. You know, he had some games he threw over 300 yards. He had one game he completed 75% of his passes, and he threw the ball 40 times. That's 30 out of 40 for everybody out there. You know, I mean, he looked like a legitimate NFL quarterback.
And this is what I'll say to that. I think people forget that there was no OTAs. Training camp was truly abbreviated. He's competing with Orton. He's competing with what's the boy, Brady Quinn, for snaps in training camp. And it's a new system. And so, again, with Tebow, I think whatever you ask him to do, you have to give him a ton of reps in it. And I think the things that they're asking him to do, he's just not very good at. And I think he was able to get reps. And Josh McDaniels was able to – Josh McDaniels had a vision for what he wanted Tebow to do, and then he coached Tebow up on doing those things. And now Tebow is being asked to do something different without that same amount of preparation time. And so dude looks really bad. And he's the type of guy where if you ask him to just do something as far as, like, just dropping back, you don't know what you're going to get. You have to really prepare him and coach him up on the finer points of what you want him to do. Because I think he's the type of guy, he'll listen, and he's going to do the work to try and learn it. But until he gets it, it's going to be ugly. and I think that's what they got now, is that he just isn't in the position to be successful throwing the ball. And the stuff that they're asking him to do, they just really don't see him doing it well. And so they're not asking him to throw the ball a whole lot, because whatever it is with the drops, with the footwork that they're asking him to use, because different offenses have different footwork techniques, different amount of drops, you know, different step drops that you have to take, all those things, you know, he probably is having trouble with learning, because that just, or even in certain kind of throws and routes that he's not accustomed to throwing, that he's learning that they're having him do. It's fascinating to watch, though, because you just can't figure out, why is this dude successful? Like, why is this working?
I agree, man.
Like I said, I watched those two games before I picked him for my dog of the week, man. And I was like, why does this stuff work?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But let's jump right back into this pick six, man. So, Phil T, you taking Green. Everybody taking Green Bay. We got Detroit at New Orleans. I'm taking the Saints. They look real hot right now. Detroit's going to be without Ndamukong. I think that's going to hurt. You got to be able to put pressure on Drew Brees. I think it's going to hurt Detroit. The Saints are at home on the turf. They're hard to beat in the Superdome. So I'm going with the Saints. Phil T, you said you're taking Detroit?
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's why I'm taking Detroit.
Okay. D. Wills, who you taking?
Well, that home cooking going to kill you. I'm going with the Saints.
All right. All right, and then the third game, we got Denver at Minnesota. The reason I put this one in here, man, is because something's got to give, man. At some point, this boy got to lose.
This is like the pea soup and carrot bowl. It's just mad.
It really is, man. It really is. But Tebow, man, I'm telling you, man, like, if you haven't had a chance to sit down and watch this dude play a whole game, man, you have to watch. Because you're just sitting there watching, just like, why does this shit work? Like, y'all know he's not going to throw it. It's like playing against that dude, you know, when you were younger, you had that older cousin or that uncle or that bigger brother who was better at Tecmo Bowl or Madden or whatever your football game of choice was, and he had about three plays that he would run, and he would run those three plays on your ass all game and beat the hell out of you with just, like, three plays. And you were just like, how are you doing this to me? That's what it's like watching Tebow. You just wonder, like, are y'all going to figure this out? I mean,
That's why I said he's a lot like George Bush in that second election. Aren't y'all listening to what I'm listening to? How the hell are you voting for him? Has he said anything that worked? He won.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Tebow is baffling me right now. And it really is fascinating, man. It really is fascinating to watch this dude, because I've literally been amazed the two times I watched them. And then I'm watching as they're going on this 95-yard drive to win the game against the Jets defense. And as it's going, I'm like, he's going to do it again. And they're not going to be able to do nothing about it.
Yes.
And then just a look on Rex Ryan's face,
oh,
like,
my goodness. That's
like, what the fuck just happened? Motherfucker, he just got T-boned. I mean, it's crazy, man.
Fred was going to go down on one knee. Like, praying for him. Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, man, it's amazing to watch this dude, man. It is ugly. It's not pretty. But he's got his teammates believing. And that defense is gully. That defense is the real deal, man.
Right.
At least they're playing like it right now. You know, Von Miller and Doomerville. And people sleep on Champ Bailey. Champ Bailey has been holding it down as a cover corner for a minute.
That's right.
He's not at the level he was at when he was younger. But he still takes some cats out of the game. He may not do it as regularly, and they may play him in more zone than they used to in the past. But Champ is still a legit back, man. He's still a legit DB. So I took Minnie in that one. Phil T, you took Denver?
Yeah, I'm rolling with Denver. Roll the ride.
All right. D. Wills, who you taking?
I'm rolling with Denver because of defense, special teams.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
All right, we got a couple title games in our football, on our football card. We got Wisconsin at Michigan State for the Big Ten title. I took Wisconsin. Phil T, who'd you take? I don't remember.
I'm going with the Badgers.
Okay. D. Wills?
On Wisconsin.
All right. All right. Then we got the ACC title game, Virginia Tech versus Clemson. I'm taking the Tigers. Phil T took the Tigers. D. Wills, who you taking?
I'm taking Virginia Tech.
All right.
Wow.
Okay. And then we got Bedlam, the Bedlam game, Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State. I'm taking the Cowboys at home. Was that a home? I don't even know if that's a home game. I think it's a home game for the Cowboys.
It's at Oklahoma State.
Okay. Yeah, I'm taking the Cowboys at home. Who you taking, D. Wills?
I'm taking Cowboys.
All right. Phil T, who you taking?
I'm taking the Vons Paper Champions, the Cowboys.
Yeah, we all kind of switched on them. I think it's more so Oklahoma than what Oklahoma State has done.
Yeah.
Oklahoma has shown some cheeks in the armor after they look like world beaters early. So, cool. I'll get us all caught up and tabulated on our pick sixes, and we can get the standings back up. I just haven't had time to do the math on those. And that could get messy on air, so I'm not going to do that. So that's a wrap, fellas.
All
right. Go ahead and catch some Z's.
Yep.
Try to recover from this sore throat. But y'all be easy, man. And good show. Good show, man. I'm looking forward to the rest of these picks, man. This is good talk.
Yeah, y'all got me thinking. So I'm an old cat. I got a little bit of mix of this and that. So I'm trying to throw a little bit here and there in there. So this is going to be, I'm like in between both of y'all.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to talk to you about that Ginobili.